of our laughter ringing the air. Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there.
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh,
this is WHFR, Dearborn, the station making waves. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our local news and alternative views program weekly, yes, from 1 to 2 p.m. every Friday. We're live in the studio today. It's Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director, and myself. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Good afternoon. Today? How are you, sir?
Okay. You're very excited because you're one of your many other hats here at the college. You just have a new edition of the Mirror newspaper out?
A new edition.
Another. Or did it come out a couple weeks ago?
Oh, no. Oh, it comes out today.
Oh, today. Absolutely. Well, that's what I mean. Oh, this is exciting for you.
I thought you were talking about our crack new photographer we have who got a picture of that coyote, not the bobcat.
Well, that's a great idea, too. Yeah.
Yeah. He happened to be out there at the right time on October 30th at 9:40 a.m., and he has a wonderful shot of that coyote who we've named Wiley, by the way.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be on the front page of the Mirror News that comes out today.
It's hard to tell from a photograph, but you said, or your photographer indicated it looked like it was big enough to be about 65 pounds.
I forwarded it to Gary Irwin here at the college, who says he's a hunter, and he noticed it, and it was quite on the large side, and he estimated it by the picture at about 65 pounds.
Okay.
So
okay.
It would maybe be the daddy, you know?
It's a big... Yeah. Well, it's a family. If you know anything about wolves, unless, of course, they're cornered or they're really in desperate straits, I mean, these wolves do have the whole forested area there,
yeah.
and so they're probably able to find their own food pretty well. So it's not something to be worried about, but no, people shouldn't go up and try to pet wild animals or anything like that. But again, and this photograph was taken right on the boundary there, right on the outside perimeter drive edge. That's where the wolf was. So he's not wandering between the buildings or attending classes or anything here. So.
This was the western. It's the westernmost edge of the campus, right where it meets the river.
And again, despite rumors, and always don't act on a rumor. I mean, until the information is verified by maybe more than one source, it was not a bobcat.
And that's important,
yeah.
Right? It's been confirmed by about 10 sources.
Well, people are scared of those big carnivorous creatures. But wolves, basically, they do have a family structure within their native habitat, and they are protective, of course, of their families, but they're not this all-out violent predator that's sometimes portrayed in fairy tales to kids and so on.
You know, I never thought about it. You're right.
Yeah.
But I would be a little more concerned if it were a bobcat.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Well, they're larger than 65 pounds usually, too.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. and maybe more hungry. So in any event, okay, so we're off and running with the news here. We always look at, on this show, of course, the Dearborn Press and Guide, the Dearborn Times Herald, and any other things that we think are relevant locally. And then Dennis and I, because we're here today, we're the ones expressing our own opinions or interpretations, I should say, as best as we can. We're trying to make them rational interpretations of information to fill in the gaps, to fill in the cracks, and to challenge you to do your own thinking about these issues and try to find out more information yourself. I think looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, one of the stories, of course, most of the papers this week were covering the election in Dearborn, which we already covered last week. If you didn't hear that and our comments about that, of course, go to whfr.fm, our website. Click on talk shows and click on the journal, and the date would be last Friday's date, the 11th.
Sure.
Yes, 11-11. In any event, appeals court in this area has lifted Terry Jones' Islamic Center ban, and I thought it was worthy.
You got it. Sorry.
Of some details about that, because the ban and his treatment I thought was excessive, although the court did agree that he probably shouldn't have tried to come during, wasn't it, Easter week or something, and there was going to be events there, and that whole row of churches, I mean, right, both Christian and Muslim over there, north of Henry Ford Community College, north of Ford Road, and that definitely probably was not a good time to do it because of the traffic, and some people would want to stop or make comments or or listen or whatever. And
which, of course, he calculated.
Of course, yeah. But
and if there was a doubt, we knew it because next time he came was during
there was
the
a public
holiday.
Safety and just an access to those churches issue there. It's only one road in front of them that I think it has two entrances on each end.
Right, it's a service drive.
Right, so here exactly is what it is, so you don't get carried away here with suppositions, and I think it was a fair decision. The ban on, they refer to him in the paper, which is, I think, an incendiary, Quran-burning pastor Terry Jones. Yes, he did burn a Quran, a holy book of the Muslim faith, but nonetheless, it was a three-year ban that was put on him from protesting outside the Islamic Center of Mission of America, right here in Dearborn. Okay, and that was, you know, they said, well, you can't come by for 3 years. Well, I don't understand where that's coming from. That's just not right. And that was overturned. So Jones and his cohort, Wayne Sapp, that's S-A-P-P, folks.
Okay. Well, that's better.
No double entendre here. Right,
right. Right.
Jones and Sapp in April were tried in a quasi-criminal proceeding. How can it be quasi? You know, I mean, it's either a criminal or it's a civil proceeding.
Right.
So that seems wrong to me.
Well,
that
he wouldn't pay the peace bond, so he ended up in jail. Maybe that's where that comes from.
It's known as a peace bond hearing.
Right.
That's what it was.
There you go.
The Wayne County Prosecutor's Office brought the case after Dearborn Police and Jones reported hundreds of death threats against Jones in response to the protest. A jury ruled that Jones and Sapp would likely breach the peace if they went forward. Well, they'd be in danger for their own lives, I guess.
Well, that would be
breaching
a breach
the peace, but I think, it would
any
breach
violence.
Their civil rights if they died. So maybe it was for their own safety. Still, you know, you can give a death threat and then not act on it. I mean, it's, you know, so
it's still illegal, though. Right?
Yeah, right. Yes, giving death threats over the phone is technically illegal.
Huh.
Over the phone.
Okay.
You can't phone them in. If they catch you, they can prosecute you for death threats. Now, giving a death threat in person to someone, you can report that person to the police, and they may investigate. They'll make a note of it. That
right.
person
it's a complaint.
Threatened you, but they can't prosecute for a threat.
Right.
Except if it's over the phone, and they can track you down. They can, because it's against the use of, this is an FCC rule. FCC handles not just broadcast radio and TV like WHFR broadcast radio, but also telephones.
Sure.
And it's against the law to threaten someone over the phone, and there is, I think it's more than a misdemeanor. I think it's a felony, but it might be 2 years in jail for that.
That's considered assault, yes?
Well, it's
a threat is assault. Well, here's what the reason why
threatening someone's life.
And actually physically acting upon
assault
it
or murder, yes.
Is the battery part of it. But my friend who was an attorney, he had to represent somebody who was going to jail for, in a bar, he said, let's take this outside. That was considered a threat of imminent danger.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. And he went to jail for it.
Mm-hmm. District Judge Mark Summers, we remember him
very
fighting
well.
His various lawsuits this year and losing, I think, two out of the three so far, but appealing both still. Anyway, he was the one that ordered Jones and Sapp to pay a dollar peace bond, which, not too bad, just a token, right?
Right.
And stay away from the mosque for 3 years. So that's what has been appealed and thrown out. Of course, in effect, it did keep him away for quite a few months, didn't it?
Sure did.
I mean, even if he thought, well, that won't hold up later, but that'll keep him away for a good long time until they appeal it, you know. And so Jones did appeal the conviction, and it was Wayne County Circuit Judge Robert Siolkowski sided with county prosecutors in the city on prohibiting the men from holding the planned anti-Islam protest on Good Friday. It was it Easter week,
You're
Good
right.
Friday, saying so they did say that was okay on that day, but not the 3 years. And Jones has told the Detroit Free Press that he would definitely hold a demonstration in the mosque, probably this coming spring. Oh, at the mosque. I'm sorry, not yeah. in at the mosque in the spring. But
so basically,
I think he knows Good Friday wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Again.
Well, you know, and it just seems like the court at the time had a knee-jerk reaction, but it was for his safety as well as the safety of the general community.
Actually, it was.
You know, so for 3 years, but I understand that being overturned as well. But for that day, I mean, it was, you know, it's like all of a sudden, uh-oh, Pastor Jones is here. What are we going to do? You know,
he was certainly serious. If anything had happened to him, that really would have been bad news for the American Muslim community.
It absolutely
too.
Would
so,
have. Yeah.
I don't know who was doing the death threats, but American Muslims should know that if they actually did more than just try to inconvenience him, if they did attack or try to kill him, oh my goodness, they would be pilloried by the whole world,
sure.
in fact, not just the other people in the U.S. or this area. So that wouldn't be a good choice at all, no matter how mad they are that he burned one of their holy books, his copy of the Quran. In any event, that just want to let you know where that's going now, and he may be back. And, of course, my feeling is, don't complain about him. Don't protest. Don't threaten him. Let him do his thing and don't show up, certainly.
That is the best advice ever.
Yeah. I mean, if there's no publicity and if he's just standing out there all by himself.
Well, it was Mr. Sapp next door.
Yeah. And even if the media covers that, they'll show that nobody supports him. So
absolutely. You know, you want the media to cover that.
Yeah, exactly. If nobody shows up, you want the media to be there to show that how his so called protest had no supporters or. The other people cared so little about his protest, even though he was protesting what they believed, they didn't show up either
right.
to give him any extra support. Well, that's my feeling about media events, media circus like that. Looking at, there's a couple of things that we'll just mention along the way today. Obviously, this time of year, there's special entertainment for the holiday season on December 9th, and it's a couple weeks away, but it's planned for this. I think it's a Saturday at 8 p.m. Here at Henry Ford Community College main campus in the Adre Auditorium, Fine Arts Building, is the annual Fall Jazz Concert. Okay, so 28th year. I don't know why they weren't doing it before then, but because they try every semester, like fall and winter semester at the end, to give people who are in the music programs a chance to perform and show their talents to the public. And that's always exciting. But they also raise a little bit of money, a little fundraising there, too. It's $10 for adults at the door and $7 for students. For advanced tickets, you can email Rick Goward. That is R-G-O-W-A-R-D at hfcc.edu. So it's R-G-O-W-A-R-D@hfcc.edu in order to get reservation for the tickets. I think you'd probably pay at the door, but they'll put them in an envelope, put them aside for you. The room only holds about 400, and they always are packed for those.
It's yeah.
great.
It is. You're right. It's a will call. They just call in, mm-hmm. and it'll be yeah. reserve it for
it's usually
you.
The way they do it with the theater department here.
Mm-hmm.
Also a choral concert coming up, but that wasn't in this edition, this paper. It was in a later paper, so we'll mention that later in the hour. Here's an important topic and something that I've been thinking about for a while, too, although I have a really diverse opinion. Tom Watkins, who is a former head of the Michigan Department of Education many years ago under some of the Granheim administration, but then she sort of found a way to kick him out for various reasons, and I won't go into that now. But nonetheless, he has been sort of an educational consultant, gadabout in general in the papers, writing columns regularly that are published in the Press and Guide. And I agree with about half of what he says most of the time. I mean, he does have knowledge, and he's traveled widely, including to China and so on. And his editorial opinion, and it's more than just this headline, but he said bullying should not be tolerated. Well, there's something that everybody could agree with right at the outset. But the article actually goes into this further. And just on the fly here, because my colleague Dennis is so intelligent and well-connected, how would you define bullying?
It's amazing that you asked that, because I really was thinking that means so many things to so many people.
Right.
Somebody in a position of strength, using that strength to exploit the weaknesses in others, maybe? Because it isn't just a physical
right.
bullying.
To either hurt, torture, or limit
or just
the
get
activities
your way,
of
to
another
control,
person.
Whatever.
Right.
Sure, some people just to get their lunch
money.
We
think of it generally in schools, but it can be done over the internet.
Oh, my.
You know,
sure.
Doing something on Facebook or Twitter that would cast aspersions. And of course, it was pointed out here that... across the country, we know that one or two people that are suggested of being homosexual have been so-called outed by some person. And whether true or not, the result was so upsetting to the person that they committed suicide.
Right.
Because they felt, everybody knows or thinks they know
right.
that I'm a homosexual. Although I don't think there should be any shame in that. But nonetheless, if you don't want it out or if it's not true at all,
right.
it can really hurt, no doubt. Depending on the cultural environment and the family environment you're in, too. So I think that's a fairly good definition. Bullying can be, I think, in many contexts, though, because what's happened now is that the Dearborn Board of Education has passed various regulations against bullying in the schools, and the state of Michigan has almost passed, at least in the House, but not the Senate, I believe, anti-bullying legislation.
So let's clarify this. Bullying has always been banned, per se. In other words,
it's inappropriate.
Banned. But now you're saying there actually will be consequences beyond just a reprimand or whatever.
Right, yes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, no, maybe. It's getting it's being clarified, it's being identified, defined more specifically,
sure.
And there will be guidelines. In fact, the Dearborn Public Schools have stated, and I don't remember the resource here, but in one of these stories they've stated, we're glad that the state is trying to do something. This will support the validity of our rules.
Sure.
Okay, against it.
So, you know, and this gained a lot, because people will talk about it all the time, but it gained a lot of prominence with those school bus cameras. And I know I saw a lot. That was very disturbing, seeing these people ganging up on others.
However, as Watkins points out, and maybe you heard this too, the state bill... moves out of the Senate. It says finally this past week it moves out of the Senate, but only after perverse, controversial language supported by Republicans that provides a license to bully, that is permission to go ahead and bully people
right.
if it's on religious or moral grounds.
Oh.
They added that. So if you say, I'm a Muslim, I got a right to bully the Christians because I hate Christians.
Right.
Well, then it's okay.
Right.
This is the state law. The wording of the state law that they're tossing around hasn't been signed into law, but it's a bill that is close to being signed into law unless it's amended or worked out. And I think, as he points out, there is the Democratic Senate Minority Leader, Gretchen Whitmer, Democratic Party, Gretchen Whitmer. She appears poised to stop this awful piece of legislation from moving forward. Also, Republican Speaker J.A.S.E. Bolger said that he is working on language to protect all students. And, of course, Tom Watkins says, as he should, thank you. So we don't know how it's going to come out, but what in the world
is there any reason?
To allow bullying on religious or moral grounds? And, of course, he says, whose morality or religion makes it okay to bully someone?
Thank you, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure about Christianity. It depends on which branch of Christianity or sect you're
right.
talking about. Certainly we know that some extreme Islamic sects, S-E-C-T-S, you know, want to take action against all Christians who they see as pagans, interestingly, or frighteningly. And so there's exceptions, but you can't pass an anti-bullying law that... moral grounds. What? I'm moral. I don't think you're moral because you pick your nose or something. Right. What? What? You know, and then they won't get any sort of punishment or discipline because they can go. They can keep bullying then.
Right.
That is crazy. And that's the state Republicans for you. I guess they thought they were protecting.
What are they protecting? I don't get the reason.
Well, the right to practice religion as you see fit, yes, but not to go around bullying other people or hurting other people or, you know, assault and battery. And you know, obviously those things are against the law. Well, so bullying is just a special case of verbal and psychological intimidation and assault. And it could even be against someone who's homosexual or.
Right.
Whatever you want. He was good to point this out, is that we've still got a ways to go here, folks, at the state of Michigan. And in this case, he does blame, and I'm sorry, that's, you know, Republicans that put this extra addenda provision into this bill. And let's hope it doesn't get signed into law by the governor this way. But they're still working on that, according to Tom Watkins. And of course, he wrote his comment maybe in early... maybe November 6th or 7th. It's in Sunday, November 13th. So something could have happened in the last few days, and I think it might have, and I don't know what it is. So I'm going to try to ask George Duraney. He's coming on campus here at HFCC this afternoon to a meeting of our part-time teachers union. We have a union for part-time teachers. Yes, thank goodness. I'm all in favor of unions. You know, the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else at Henry Ford Community College. But to me, if you look, and folks, I just got to say this as an aside too. If you want to take the time and look over the history of the last 200 years in Europe and America and look at the development of unions, why they formed, how important they were to bringing about social justice and social causes, you'll see that unions are an essential part, I think, of a good capitalistic system. They give balance and structure and some equity, not all, to the workers. Otherwise, the workers have no place to go if their boss wants to be mean to them or cut their pay or give them poor working conditions. They have no power to say no. And you say, well, they shouldn't have power to say, well, duh. You know, especially if there's collusion among the business people, especially in industries where there's only two or three companies, you say, well, they can go work for another company that'll pay them more. No, there won't be any if all the business people say, oh, let's cut all their wages and benefits, and they'll have to keep their job because there's no other place to go. So I do think some business people are very enlightened, very benevolent, but you can say that about dictators too.
Sure. Yep.
And in fact, even the U.S. government has supported various dictatorships around the world in the past 50 years because they felt, well, they're better than a mean dictator, even if we can't get democracy. But whatever what happens is that a benevolent dictator often becomes a vicious, brutal dictator. Why? Because he can.
Right.
He's got all the power. And if he wants to, he can go and... put his army out there and just start shooting people right and left, which happened in Syria and other countries in the last year. Look at Muammar Gaddafi, now eliminated, from the world stage or from this plane of existence. But was he a nice guy or a bad guy? Well, it depends on which year. You know, he's keeping... he's keeping the business trade open there, at least, you know, even though he's brutal to his people. Saddam Hussein, for a while, we thought was, our bastion of support against Iran. So we're going to give him money and even weapons of mass destruction to use against Iran. This was in the late 80s, early 90s. Of course, it turned out he used them against some of his own
Kuwait.
People. not Kuwait, the sect of Muslims in the north of his own country.
Sure.
I can't remember. Oh, it's not Basque. Does it start with a B? Bath. No. That was his secular political party.
Right.
He was a Baathist himself.
Right.
So he ruled all these different Muslim sects and tribes under a secular government, even though he was always saying praise to Allah and so on, you know, to keep them happy. But he could sort of be non-committal with his secular government that way. But no, he still, the Kurds.
That's
he
right.
went after the Kurds.
That's right.
And that's what he was finally charged with after they caught him, was that use of our weapons of mass destruction against the people in his own country.
Sure.
For no reason other than, they're I don't like them. They're a particular type of a Muslim.
Talk about a bully, huh?
They control oil fields that I would like to control. And talk about a bully. Exactly.
The worst.
And that's how I got into this. Is that once we get this in place, there's a lot of kind of bullying. How many decades have we been talking about police acting as bullies?
Well, it's going on right now to some people's minds, too.
That we get comments about that all the time, and so do the police, not just in Detroit, but all around the country. So people in power, when are they bullies? When aren't they bullies? It'll raise an interesting question, because once the anti-bullying policies get firm for schools, then it'll start slipping over into our national consciousness about, well, who really is a bully here? Who's pushing, shoving? Is President Obama a bully by setting up a healthcare system that is a clear improvement over what we had before, even though not everyone is covered? It's not the healthcare system I would be in favor of, but nonetheless. Is government in general a bully when they pass a law and we've got to all follow it, even if we don't agree with it? Well, no, it's the essence of democracy is that the minority has to go along with the majority.
Right.
Although they should have some rights of expression if they want to change the law later. So anyway, take a read of that, Tom Watkins. He does go on later to talk about Herman Cain and Bill Clinton in terms of allegations and the exploitation of women.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that sexual harassment, is that a type of bullying?
It seems like it would be.
Sort of.
Sure.
Yeah,
but would fall under that. You know, some of these aren't as black and white. I just thought with unions, as you know, it's not just, you have the power of representation, but there's safety in numbers. You can get a lot. Mm-hmm. Can't you get better deals when you buy in bulk to bring it down to simple terms?
Generally true.
Okay.
Generally true. In terms of health care and all that?
And all of that, yeah. Sure. The benefits
no doubt about that. The main editorial in the Pressing Guide from last Sunday, too, Tim Powers, I assume, wrote it. I'm not sure. They never put their name on that, whether it's the publisher or the editor in charge. But he says, and he reminds us that the city of Dearborn and the city of Dearborn Heights, even though they have their millages, and we said this last week, so he probably got the idea from us. No. From his own report, is that there's still some cuts to be made. Dearborn still has to cut $8.5 million from their budget, even if they use all of the millage, the extra 3.5 that they got approved for this coming year. So tough decisions there still have to be made. But they point out, if you look in the details, they point out that the two things that are out of control is healthcare costs,
mm-hmm,
and pension costs.
Pension costs.
Okay. And they're both extremely important, especially the people that are receiving a pension, such as myself, because we're being promised this. That's what we expected. That's how if we did plan at all, that's how we plan to exist. And to cut that is really going back on a very, very significant promise. Like even the city of Detroit, which is now broke, they say officially, or will be in April officially, they have more people on a pension than they have working for city government. They have more people retired that they have to pay pensions to and health care,
mm-hmm,
than are working for city government. Well, there's big suggestions out there that the city of Detroit can't do anything about it, but the state of Michigan, they could put a statewide health care plan for all in place, like Vermont has done.
Right.
And that would wipe out all the cost. I mean, Mayor O'Reilly's even said this too. He wants it. He wants universal single-payer health care for the whole U.S., or let the state of Michigan do it, like Vermont. That would lower the cost for everybody and eliminate that burden from the individual cities, and then hopefully, because the state and or the federal government would be in charge, they could work with these providers to lower costs on drugs. They could then, if they had that control, they could lower the costs, and they'd force it on them, because to me, I haven't seen anything from big pharma or the big hospitals about why their costs are going up. Okay, why do they need 12 to 20% increases in payments to them each year?
Because their marketing costs went up.
Exactly.
That's true.
Exactly. And they're building more facilities. They're consolidating in other words, it is becoming big business. When there was more smaller hospitals convenient to you, very convenient, you know, in your own neighborhood even, they were only concerned about the people in their area, and they could actually respond to what the people needed. And now the big hospitals, all they care about is profit. It's true. I mean, they have to. That's the number one reason they're together and how they're functioning. But these increases doesn't make any sense. And even big pharma, what kind of drugs are they trying to research and discover? Drugs that only minimize symptoms.
Good point.
If they spent any money to work on curing cancer, curing the common cold, curing heart disease, then once they got profit from that, it would be over with. It's like the polio vaccine. Now, we still need a little bit of it, but basically, polio is not a constant scourge of in our country.
So let me hear, if I hear you correctly, you're saying that cures to some of these diseases and some of the
common
infections would
possible.
Actually be bad for business.
Of course they would.
Wow.
Yeah, because then we wouldn't need the drugs anymore. So the only thing they tell all their researchers to go after is stuff that just maintains people, that they have to take every day or every month. They have to take this or they're going to die. You know, so their symptoms will get worse and they can't live. And that's crazy to only do that. That's where government, well, we need to be, if that's what these companies, they refuse to research a cure, then big government has to come in and start hiring the best researchers to look for cures that could actually get rid of these diseases once and for all. Maybe it would be genetic gene splicing or something that would make us give us immunity. Whatever it is, there may be cures, but if nobody does any research, of course we'll never find out the answer. Totally against the general all these cost increases from the healthcare, the private healthcare companies and big pharma. And universal single-payer healthcare in Canada and France and Germany and England have stopped those increase in costs, and they have made their systems. We're only, at best, seventh best in the world in terms of healthcare. If you look at all the things that are available, only seventh best. We're not number one. No, we're number one in the high-tech expensive stuff that only a few people, the 1%, can afford. If they want to pay for them, you know, but these other countries do it for everybody. And, well, I also point out that we're number one in the cost of healthcare per person. We're spending more money for healthcare per person on average in the U.S. than any other country, but we're not getting the benefits.
No, and everybody says, well, we're the wealthiest country. That's how it should be. And that's just not, that doesn't make any sense.
That's not how I see it. I think there's no compassion. Besides, you said, well, we shouldn't have to pay for the poor and their healthcare. Why don't they get a job? Many reasons why they can't. In fact, if they were healthier ongoing, we wouldn't have such an emergency hospital burden either. And if these people were healthy, imagine, maybe then they could get a job, you know?
Right.
Maybe they could get an education. But if you're not healthy enough to get an education or work regularly at a job, you're kind of stuck. That's why I think life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, life is that first principle in the Declaration of Independence, isn't it? Or is it the Constitution? Anyway, you know, it's a pretty important principle. You can't have life if you're unhealthy.
Right.
I mean, you know, health is the first. Well, anyway, but so it seems to me that the bigger answers for all the cities and the states, for that matter, in controlling the healthcare costs, which is one of those big costs, is move towards universal single payer, either for the state, like Vermont is putting in place and will be effective in a year or so for everybody in Vermont, but also for the whole country. Oh,
so let me ask you, I know we're up against it here for a break, but
yeah, we're going to play some Hightower comments.
So why does it take so long for our government to approve drugs? And I know that there's a lot of lobbyists that want the next best thing out there, but we take so long.
I don't think you should get me started on the FDA.
Okay,
the Food and Drug Administration, first of all, they've done some crazy things. They've approved genetically modified foods, which I think are totally wrong, and that's banned in Germany. Well, it's not banned. It must keep them, the foods that are genetically modified. That's genetically modify the seeds.
Sure.
So they're not natural anymore. They may be good for you. They may not be. But they have to be clearly labeled. GM, for genetically modified in Germany. And wow. I think people can make their own choice then.
Sure, organic, but mainstream,
there's
and
a big yeah, there's a big difference of opinion about the healthiness there. Also, there's already established opinion about the unhealthiness of fish farms.
Right.
That is, whether it's a lake or just a corralled area off the coast of the country where the fish are squeezed together and they're fed unnatural synthetic things to make them get fat quick, and then they harvest them and, you know, kill them, put them in our food chain. Pesticides, cancer-causing things. You don't want to eat salmon from a fish farm, for example.
Right.
It's been proven not to be healthy. I often at a restaurant where they have salmon, they try to tell me, I always ask them, did it come from a fish farm? But only if it comes from the wild in the Pacific.
Yeah, actually, the Pacific is right. I just read less than 7 days ago, do not eat salmon from the Atlantic. And it's exactly why you're saying
Well, because it's fish farm Atlantic,
North
basically.
Atlantic, yes.
Yeah. And we have some comments we could do later about that. But the FDA, in terms of their drug approvals, too, that's a big story. I mean,
yeah.
We could go on and on about the it looks like, just like in politics, the lobbyists, the big companies that put the money into promoting what they want. Well, here was the example that even Jon Stewart on The Daily Show last night on Comedy Central Cable Network made, and that is that in the last week, in terms of food, approved for use in the schools. They have approved now and nationally and have passed a bill saying that French fries are good for you now.
Of course they are.
and much higher salt levels are good for you and allowed now than before in school lunches. And, of course, 2 tablespoons of tomato paste makes pizza a vegetable now. So in terms of balanced diets, pizza is now a vegetable.
Hmm.
And, of course, it isn't. Of course, it's wrong. And they said, well, how do these rules get off? Said, oh, well, the potato industry came in and the salt producing industry and the pizza people,
and
I'm thinking Herman Cain, came by and they said, oh, we need more business. And these rules are very restrictive. Pizza is really good for you. Well, pizza may not be bad for you, but it's not a vegetable, folks. Just because it's got 2 tablespoons of tomato paste on it doesn't make it a full-bodied, fully nutritional vegetable. And additional salt? There's some difference of opinion on that. Potatoes, there should be a limit on carbohydrates.
And
potatoes,
fried
especially fried food,
sure.
Like French fries, yeah.
It's not a starch anymore, is it? Once it's a fried.
Well, it's what they call a high glycemic vegetable, potatoes are. And so you shouldn't eat too many of them, especially if you have borderline diabetes or diabetes, because they turn into sugar in your blood really quick.
Right, and, those starchy type.
And a big-time spike could, for a diabetic, could knock them out,
yeah.
Could even kill them. So you have to be careful of things. I'm not saying stay away from potatoes, but French fries. So I'm just saying that's political power from the big lobbyist groups, from the big companies banding together to get at our legislators who apparently are too stupid or too poor or desperate for campaign funds for the next campaign to say no to them. You know, I just that whole system is really wrong, and we need legislators who can get elected because they're honest and fair-minded and they make the tough decisions, and we need to respect them for that and not be beholden just to the big business interests and to sacrifice some health and safety for the rest of us. That's just...
When you were a kid, were the lunches the same as now? I mean, did you have your pizza and your burger and fries, or was it different? Was there like an apple with every meal?
Of course, when I was a kid, that's the dark ages.
Yeah, the one-room school.
1950s, 50 years ago. There weren't any requirements about school lunches, but usually it was understood that the school would try to have a hot lunch for kids. And they had bigger and better kitchens than they have now. So they actually had more people employed in cooking food fresh.
Well, there were less preservatives as well. So it wasn't like you could, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And things were frozen. Yeah,
exactly.
You
right.
You get a meal with a free cigarette.
The meat would come right from a nearby farm or whatever.
Right.
I know when I went to Oakland University in the 60s, that's up in Rochester, Michigan, they could have gotten, because originally they were associated with Michigan State University, they could have gotten all the frozen food and they wanted to, and all the preprocessed food that MSU was already buying for their dorms. But in fact, they made a decision everything we get will be bought locally. And this is in the 60s.
Right.
Fresh from local farmers.
And Michigan State was an agricultural college back then, too.
And even for things like pastries, donuts and that. We didn't have donuts except on Saturday morning. And they had a baker come in and make the donuts fresh right in the kitchen at the college dorms. Now, things have changed out there. I mean, my daughter went there for a while. So everybody's sacrificing for the sake of cutting costs. That again, most of the schools, they can't afford the additional cost of fresh food to buy. They can't afford the preparation cost of having more cooks
right.
and more servers.
There'd be more deliveries because you'd need it right. fresh.
Wouldn't that make our kids more healthy?
Sure. Seems like a small price. You're right.
Yeah, right. And in fact, there's even, of course, the statistics, Head Start program, which has been around in the 60s, that made sure that kids coming to school would get a breakfast,
right.
too, if they didn't have it at home, that there was a way to subsidize
that. They still do that.
And that's probably the most important meal of the day yeah. to get your energy going so that you can be a good student and be healthy, too. And so in some cases, the family should provide the breakfast for the kids, but, before they get to school. But if they can't, they can't afford it, or they have already gone to work or who knows what, then if they're in that situation, then the schools need to provide that breakfast, too, for the kids. And everybody needs to share the burden of that for the good of the whole society. We need to bring everybody up, not to have this big divide between the haves and the have-nots, the 1% and the other 99. That's just the wrong way to go. Everybody says, well, but I want to be one of the 1%. Well, you won't be, folks. The odds are way, way against it, the way things are going.
And really, it's overrated.
Most of us would like to try it for a while, though.
Not that I know.
Just to check that out.
Yeah, just to see if you're right.
Uh-huh.
That's funny.
Okay. Let's listen to a couple comments now of Jim Hightower. And I think when we come back, I'm going to hit the highlights. He had the major cover story in the Press and Guide last week. We didn't get a chance. He has 8 suggestions to all of us. If we're interested in this big divide, 1%, 99%, and we don't want to stay out in the cold in some park somewhere or get kicked out by the police or thrown to jail, what are things we can do? And he has some very good suggestions, some of which I hadn't thought of before, and it doesn't mean that he's a genius. It just means that I hadn't thought it through, and so we'd like to cover a few of those. But here's a couple comments from him. The first is one that he does talk about in here, and it refers to how to get unhooked from your big bank. And then we're a little ways away. We're on the Canadian border, but he talks about war on the Mexican border. So here's Jim Hightower, 2 comments back to back.
It's one thing to be addicted to a drug, but it's worse to be hooked because someone else is addicted. The someone in this case is Bank of America, along with J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and other members of the Big Bankers gang. The drug they're hooked on is one they love, rely on, and have no desire to shake: consumer fees. Such assessments on their own customers are now a major source of income in their banking systems, and they're more creative than other kinds of junkies in finding ways to get more of the stuff. One especially infuriating creation by these fee junkies is one that hooks you to their addiction: internet banking. To draw you in, they initially offered free online bill paying, electronic deposits, etc. "Sign up with us," they purred. "We're here to serve you." Millions were lured in. But then, gotcha. Free soon turned into fees. Well, customers could just move their internet business to another bank, right? Not so simple. The banks have deliberately wired their technology to make it a pain in the rear for anyone to switch. Instead of just click on move, you have to disentangle each one of your electronic transactions separately: your various credit card accounts, rent payments, utility bills, etc., etc. One fellow who tried to move from Bank of America says he was so overwhelmed by the complications of switching dozens of his online arrangements that he gave up. "I'm really annoyed," he told the New York Times, "but someone at Bank of America made that calculation." This is Jim Hightower saying, Representative Brad Miller, having made his own calculation that consumers should be able to move at will, has introduced a bill in Congress to make it easier for customers to free themselves from their bank's fee addiction. For information, go to Representative Miller's website, www.bradmiller.house.gov.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Grim-faced military officers and ashen-faced politicians describe a horrific war zone with hundreds of people murdered and, quote, citizens under attack around the clock. Some of the politicos say that the situation is so dire that, quote, it may require our military. Like the frenetic Bush-Cheney litany of lies that rushed America into the senseless Iraq War, what we're now getting is a similar burst of mendacity about Mexican drug violence spilling across the border into our country. Rick Perry, the Texas gubernatorial goober, is even trying to make it a presidential campaign issue. It is not safe on that border, he recently wailed to New Hampshire Republicans, suggesting that he might send U.S. troops into Mexico, quote, to kill these drug cartels. Adding to this macho melodrama, two retired Army generals produced a study asserting that spillover violence makes the U.S. side, quote, tantamount to living in a war zone. One of the ex-generals is Barry McCaffrey, the infamous hyperventilating fearmonger who once was America's drug czar. At a press conference, McCaffrey pointed excitedly to hundreds of people murdered on our side of the frontier. Really? Hundreds murdered? No. His source turned out to be a South Texas rancher full of anecdotes about dead bodies found in the brush. But the Border Patrol says these were unlucky immigrants who perished during the past several years trying to enter our country, not recent victims of Mexican cartels. In fact, far from being a chaotic war scene, a study of the 14 Texas counties bordering Mexico shows that the number of murders have actually gone down in the past 5 years. This is Jim Hightower saying, rumors of a Mexican cartel war in the U.S. are nothing but lies by self-serving political opportunists and self-aggrandizing military contractors out to line their pockets.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Yeah, that's Jim Hightower. That's the friendly Texas, Austin, Texas populist. Texas's foremost populist. I say he's the foremost populist in the United States, which means he's in favor of the people. Yeah, what's good for the people as a whole. Not just 99%, even the other 1% too. And so his comments, we feature them to get you thinking. You know, it's a point of view that you don't often clearly here stated by Democrats, and certainly never from Republicans, we just think he's the best spokesperson for that. Well, however it happened, he wrote a long essay that the Metro Times used called Occupying Democracy, the subheading is We the People, Not We the Corporations, written by Jim Hightower, and it was in last week's Metro Times, not the one currently in the newsstands. We didn't have time to, in our election special, to feature its summary of points. But that's the November 5th through 15th Metro Times. I looked for it on the website and I couldn't find it. Maybe it's because he sort of got it copywritten that they couldn't put it on the MetroTimes.com website. But they usually do put their stories there. And so if you can find a copy of last week's Metro Times, you should try to read the whole article. But here's what he comes up with. He says there he comes up with a partial menu of actions that are underway or that you could start right where you live. If you're in favor of making changes in the United States that would be good for the majority of the people. And yes, it means, you know, restricting, limiting, regulating corporations and Wall Street in order to do that. But I'd like to cover his 8 points, okay, briefly. Number one, amend. Two major coalitions, he says, are aggressively organizing grassroots power from coast to coast to demand and pass a constitutional amendment to prohibit corporations from buying our elections. Now, the Supreme Court, in a decision called People United about a year and a half ago, said, oh, yeah, corporations are people, too. Even Mitt Romney flippantly threw that out at a protester in the crowd. Said, well, corporations are people, too. Well, Mitt, I don't know where you studied your anatomy and physiology, but a corporation is not a person. There is no connection between the two there. I'm sorry, Dennis's mic wasn't on to catch his laughter there.
That's very funny.
You know, and they should not be allowed to, even through super PACs, put all the money they want to in elections. Why? Because they have tons of money. Most of these corporations, media corporations, big pharma, big hospitals, they have millions and millions and millions of dollars. And we as individuals, $5, $10, we can donate maybe 25, maybe 100 to a candidate. I'm talking about the average people putting money in. And they can talk about overbalance it, not just to mention their lobbyists. I think there should be real restrictions on lobbyists, like getting pizza certified as a vegetable and so on. Not just the power of lobbyists, which comes from the money from these corporations, but direct money paid directly to the candidates to get them elected. Which can way overshadow the money from the people or the will of the people. And, of course, once they're in office, do you think they will willingly not vote the way that those people would like them to? Look at the Republicans that didn't vote for the second bridge to Canada in Lansing when our Republican Governor Snyder wanted that. He said it'd be good for business. It won't cost us that much. Matty Maroon, who owns the Ambassador Bridge, has been paying tens of thousands of dollars to a large group of Republican state senators. And those are the ones that said, amazingly, those are the ones that didn't agree with the governor and said, no, we shouldn't go forward with the second bridge. Isn't that amazing how it happened to coincide? And do you think they might be worried that if they voted with the governor in favor of the second bridge, Matty Maroon next time around might not give them those tens of thousands of dollars. And then, guess what? They might not be able to get reelected. So just wrong, wrong, wrong. In fact, there's conflict of interest there. And I think they have to strengthen those laws so that, in fact, I think all donations should be public knowledge. But in a way, I wish we could make it so that our elected public officials would never know where the money came from. But the public needs to know. And, of course, that information would get back to them about who gave them $10,000 or not. And then, if they get $10,000 from the milk people, should they be allowed to vote on a bill that would be favorable to the milk industry? No. But that's why the milk people gave them money, because they thought you were in favor of it in the first place, or they could convince you to vote for it. So the conflict of interest problem is really serious. And I don't know a good answer here for money in politics. Of course, there's the answer that we tried to do, little checkoff boxes on the federal income tax, give a dollar or two towards the federal election fund. Mm-hmm. If that would be the sole and only funding of the political elections, not just national, but state and local, that's fair then, and that there's no corporate bias, conflict of interest that would come from that at all.
Yeah, but the problem is that's not a set number.
No, the problem is that any candidate for that office, let's say two people are running for city of Dearborn, city council at that time. Let's say it's just two people they're going for. Oh, let's say six, eight of them, whatever. Let's say they're all doing. Well, they would all get an equal amount of this money that came from the taxpayers of Dearborn if they wanted to give equally. Dollar a person, $3, whatever it was, nobody could pay more than that. But then they would split it up evenly. Well, that means that even the challengers would get the same amount of money. Well, nobody who's the incumbent wants the challenger to have the same amount of money to campaign with.
Sure.
Even though it sounds fair to me, and the incumbent would always have the advantage because they have the name recognition already. But then the challenger would say, well, I need more money to compensate for the name recognition.
Exactly. And if you talk about you've already stated this, what happens in February? It doesn't include the Green Party. It doesn't include the Libertarians. So there's already, Democrats and Republicans are already getting additional, far more exposure without raising one extra penny.
Well, and although it's getting like a comedy of errors or a circus, all the Republican national debates that we have, at least two a week, and there's 30 more to go.
Yes, Elliot.
Who is it publicizing? It's publicizing the Republicans. One point of view or another within the Republican Party is being constantly thrown at us. And, What's the counter to that? Well, we hear Obama talking every now and then and other Democrats, but where does the Green Party stand on those issues? Where are the Libertarians and other parties? They don't have any forum at all. And here the Republicans are getting all this free, in effect, free publicity for Republican conflicting points of view for about a year and a half before the election. So a lot of things that are not equitable. But I think that public financing of the elections, money to the incumbents, money to the challengers, not coming from corporations, not coming from lobbyists, all the same amount, even though that makes incumbents, gives them a slight advantage, but they always have a slight advantage anyway in fundraising. That's the way to get the sort of beholding nature, this sort of semi-hidden influence peddling out. And in terms of lobbyists, they can't give anything for free. They can't do lunches. They can take meetings in the Capitol building. They can't take them for free trips to a golf course in Arizona or Hawaii. All they can do is send them information in the mail or email, and they can meet with them in person and bring their experts in to talk about their points of view, but they can't give them Christmas presents, free trips, or campaign contributions. Nope. It seems logical to me. Nobody's even thought about that. Nobody's even proposed a rule because, oh no, that might change the whole system too much, and those of us in power might not get reelected if we change it that much. So that's status quo. We'll always fight for the status quo, and it's hard to resist it. But these changes seem logical to me. So amend, says Jim Hightower, especially since the Supreme Court won't help us and Congress can't pass it. We're needing a constitutional amendment to stop corporations from buying our elections. That should be done. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that should be done. FreeSpeechForPeople.org proposes a straightforward amendment to repeal the Supreme Court's infamous Citizen United ruling. And so you can look FreeSpeechForThePeople.org or also MoveToAmend.org. Next point, he says, uncover one of the little notice and unfulfilled promises included in the court's Citizens United ruling is that corporations should at least have to disclose to shareholders and the public how much political money they spend and on whom. Congressional Republicans, however, have blocked proposals to implement this minimalist Democratic gesture. And President Obama so far has not issued administrative rules to shine even a little sunlight on secret engineering, electioneering by corporations. So it used to be that, okay, corporations can make their contributions, but at least the public could find out about how much influence that they're peddling in terms of dollars. No, that's even going to be secret now, because Republicans and Obama, corporations are paying money to some Democrats too, sure. And so they don't really want to share that with anybody because they might be criticized. Democrats might be criticized. So we got to stop it. We the people have to stop it. Impeachment. He suggests that at least two of the corporate coddling Supremes, as he calls them, the Supreme Court, Justices Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, they had undisclosed ties to the Koch brothers and other the secretive corporate plutocrats at the time that the court was considering the Citizens United case. So they should have recused themselves, which means eliminated themselves from the voting, which they didn't do, of course. So maybe they should. I've never heard of a Supreme Court justice of the U.S. being impeached, but I guess there's a way to do it, and maybe we should. Connect, that means grassroots. We need to work together with other people of like minds, and there's so many different websites now, thanks to the Occupy movement, you can get political action started one direction or another. He does think we should confront by asking hard questions of everybody at town hall meetings, campaign events, letting them know how we feel. Send letters, send emails. He says, even if all you get from them is gibberish. I've been sending letters to my elected representatives, including Governor Snyder in the last year, and I get responses. They have to sort of respond. But they basically say, thank you for your information, and here's where we stand. And even though I told them, I don't like where you stand, it's wrong for these reasons, A, B, and C, they don't respond at all. They just say, thank you for your letter, here's where we stand. Well, that's no response. That just means I will not support you at all in the future if that's the way you're going to be.
Right.
If you don't have an answer to my questions, then maybe they could convince me to their way of thinking. but they don't even take the time. Thank you. We're not going to do it. Okay. I'm not going to support you.
I don't think they could convince you.
Well,
just throwing that out there.
I'm open to that. I've been wrong many times. There's a lot of information I don't know. I think everybody should believe that because that's true. And if new information comes up, go with it if you think it's better. Lastly, I'm skipping over a couple points, but I say work locally, too, on all these things. Enjoy what you do, he says. Enjoy. Whatever you do, think fun. How could this be more humorous, more lively, more entertaining, more welcoming, more engaging, and therefore more effective in terms of bringing about change? As much as possible, turn your meetings, work sessions, and events into parties with little food and drink, music, videos, cartoons, puppets, skits, stunts, contests, stories, and whatever else the group can think of.
Sounds expensive.
Well, I don't know, but we have to keep our sense of humor no matter what, or we're really going to crash and burn here. And so remember, We the People, and that's an organization of his, by the way, wethepeoplecampaign.org if you want more information about Jim Hightower and these initiatives that he's suggesting from the Metro Times last week. Okay, where are we going from that?
I wanted to get this in before the end. We found something on Dearborn Patch,
yes,
regarding the Dearborn Smart Busing and the fact that, according to Jessica Carreras and Jason Alley, contributed to this, and they're going to see drastic cuts. Now, the thing is, and I had told Jay earlier, they're eliminating some of the they're eliminating 10 routes that run through Dearborn, including the Route 145 on Carlisle, and then there's a main one on 265 in Warren, 245 Cherry Hill, Edsel Ford High School, and Taylor. But the point of it is that it didn't say exactly when they're making these cuts. Mm-hmm. As I read through the article one more time, there's one. Maybe this is an indication because it says also the 200 Michigan Avenue route will now transfer. It says will now transfer to the Detroit Department of Transit, the DDOT. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I think of is, like you had suggested, Jay, that these cuts with smart busing are effective, if not immediately, then very, very, very soon. And it's a little bit longer to the article. I recommend people go to dearborn.patch.com. It's right in the news thing, the news heading, Dearborn Smart Busing.
And call your transportation authority, whoever it is there that they refer to, because just don't want people to be standing out in the cold waiting for a bus that's not going to come.
Exactly.
That of the, was it 20-some routes that they eliminated last Monday, 10 of them serve Dearborn.
Yeah, 20
in
total.
One way or another.
10 in Dearborn, you're right.
That seems like unfairly picking on us. And they all go by Henry Ford Community College, U of MD, and the Fairlane Town Center. So there goes, I'm sure the town center's not happy about that. Think of the shopping around Christmas time they're not going to get because people can't get there by bus. With the same number of routes anyway. I'm sure there's some that'll still go there. But
right.
Yeah, okay. Well, we have, it is 2 o'clock. It's WHFR Dearborn. And Joanne and Highway 61 is going to start in just a minute. She's just coming in the door now. There is a question, of course, about Thanksgiving Day. Is it a day to shop or not? That was in the New York Times. Should it be a holiday? I mean, should there be any day? I mean, it used to be, 50 years ago when I was young, that most businesses were not open on Sunday. Maybe only drugstores to get your prescriptions.
And, of course, churches.
And churches,
just a bad joke, sorry.
And I don't think it's necessarily a Christian thing, but if you're going to give thanks, if you're going to be serious about the meaning of a particular holiday, of course, we don't want to necessarily force everybody to have to do a holiday if they don't want to.
Thanksgiving, would be
bullying. Yes, it would be. Thanksgiving is not associated with any particular religion. It was interesting to me is that Thanksgiving holiday, as it came about, it was suggested by Abraham Lincoln, that he's the one that suggested Thanksgiving.
Far later than everybody thinks, then.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, fall feasting and
sure,
winter solstice kind of celebrations were going on for tens of thousands of years, especially in the Northern Hemisphere. The harvesting of the crops and, the last chance to enjoy fresh food, see, before the snows hit. It's interesting.